Okay, Boker Tov. It's first of all, I just want to thank Carol Damon, who is sponsoring today's day of learning and observance of the Yortzeit today of her late husband, Dr. Harlan Damon, Tzvi Hirsch ben David Aryeh. It's Neshama Shel Avin Aliyah, to be blessed with good health and long life. I mentioned last week today was going to be, our 100th class. I was going to make, a big deal about it, but I didn't even put it in because obviously, these type of things are muted. But as we all know, the learning is, first of all, it's a sense of normalcy, which is very important. And B, of course, we believe, of course, the learning helps. It has, we have to do everything there. The people who are fighting and then the people who, our support staff. So the learning that we do should be a schut. And I want to, especially, I don't know exactly, I know my sister's here is in Efrat now, and I don't know who else is here from Israel, but really a special yashar koach to all the people who are in Israel. And it's, a tough time, but I hear from everybody how amazingly people have come together to help. And it is amazing. I wrote to a lot of people just to, so how are you? Some people I haven't spoken to in 2-3 years, friends of mine in Israel. And it's amazing how appreciative people are of that. You just write them, it takes a minute to write them a little note. It's very important. So if I can, that's one thing we can do from here, just help the morale of the people, and we should hear good news. Okay, before I start, somebody sent me privately already a message that I was talking on the wondering if anybody still uses the Birnbaum sitter. The Art Scroll put it out of business, and Koren for sure. And I don't, it's like in Seamus, you got to take a Philip Birnbaum. There was actually an article about him, I think, in Lehrhaus a few months ago. It's really a forgotten figure in many ways. He really did amazing work. I'm sure many people here, I'm sure, used the Birnbaum sitter at when they were younger, and really what he did. And there was a whole thing about his tombstone. Unfortunately, he never married. He didn't have any kids, and his tombstone was all, there were mistakes. And there was a whole article about it, sort of remembering his legacy. But, that's the way history works. And many, we move on to new generations, just the way it works. So, somebody just mentioned that, one of the large schools in Silver Spring, they're moving away. I guess they were using the Birnbaum. Now they're going to switch to Machs, to the Art Scroll. The other thing you mentioned is, I mentioned that this is, in Shomri Emuna in Silver Spring, Maryland. So I mentioned I have a few friends who grew up in the area. I haven't been there in many years, but when I was in Yeshiva University and even a little afterwards, I spent, a number of Shabbatot in Silver Spring in Rabbi Einemer's old shul. And the one, I think I mentioned, one of the things that actually had struck me was that they, on Sunday morning, they davened 6:45 or whatever the minyan is. They didn't recognize, Sunday. Sunday's Yom Chol, like Rav Moshe Feinstein writes, that ideally a Jew shouldn't get married on Sunday. Nobody follows that. We can be for whatever. Rav Moshe doesn't say it's us or forbidden. He doesn't go that far. But he doesn't think it's a good idea. It's no one follows that. I guess here, so here in Shomri Emuna, it struck me. They had wind. So the person writing to me that, they have an early minyan, but they also have four other later minyanim on Sunday. Somehow I have the feeling when I was there, they didn't have those four later minyanim. Yeah, lots of shuls have an early and late minyan because there are people who like to get up early on Sunday, but, whatever. But, so that's just interesting. Okay. But that's it. Okay. It's been a while. Oh, you still use the Birnbaum sitter. Yeah. It's, listen, right. Especially you got it as a, but mitzvah gift. And, it is very nice. I would say half the time I still use the Hertz Chumash. Does anybody use the Hertz Chumash here? Anybody who ever looked at a Hertz Chumash? Anybody? Put up your hand. Okay. Now, even Hayoma, everybody used the Hertz Chumash. I wrote a little piece once. The Hertz Chumash to me is the transformation of, American Judaism. When I was growing up in the 70s, I guess, everybody used, when I say everybody, I mean, Orthodox shuls, conservative shuls, and reform shuls, that somebody could write a commentary. It was, traditional, but scholarly. It was a lot. Now you read it. excuse me. It's a lot of, apologetics. He quotes all these non-Jewish people showing the Bible is true. But it was really an amazing work at the time, written in the 30s, and the articles in the back, and he addresses biblical criticism. Somehow it was used across the board. This is like, a dodo bird. You know, the Herz Chumash has gone the way, what can I say? The Rabbi Plaug put out the Reform Chumash, and the conservative movement has, I forget what it's called, the Red Volume Chumash. And the Orthodox have Art Scroll now, Steinsaw and Koren. Now, Koren, I don't know if they're finished yet. They're working on it, all the different things. Thank God all the texts are the same. I don't think anybody's changed any text of the Chumash, but obviously the commentary and the approaches are very different. But I don't have to tell you, I guess most of the people here were from the generation that it was different, whatever, the Herz Chumash, the Birnbaum, Machzor, okay, but that's really something. So they have a few in our shul. They still have, so I like to use it sometimes just to, you know, just to read it and to see. It is, you know, all these non-Jews we quote, so I never heard of it. It's, yes, I understand. It's American Jewry's at a different stage, you know, and that often happens, you know. A lot of the our Sidurim, et cetera. It's the same thing. Birnbaum did Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur in one Machzor. Today, Koren does Pesach and Shavuos in five Machzorim. I don't know. To me, it's a little bit of wasted paper, but we won't go there. You know, they have their own Pesach, and then they reprint it for every day Chol HaMoed. They have to print Halal again. You have to print Halal for every day of Chol HaMoed. You can put it once in the Siddur. Rav Moshe Feinstein, Taka has a tshuva about this. I may have mentioned once. Rav Moshe Feinstein has, this already is halacha, not just like, okay, don't make a wedding on Sunday. Of course, in Israel, that wouldn't apply, obviously. But Rav Moshe says you shouldn't have the same Siddur the weekday and the week and the daily Siddur. It should be two Siddurim. That's the way it used to be, actually. A lot of shuls had that, the Shabbos Siddur and the weekday Siddur. Why? Because obviously you use the weekday Siddur six times as often as you use, or, you know, our Shabbos Siddur, so it'll get ruined. So you'll have a Siddur where the pages crumble, you have to replace it, you know, six times as fast. And the Shabbos part is all good. You can use it for another 5 years, and you're throwing it into Shemus unnecessarily. So Rav Moshe Feinstein actually writes, you should have two separate Sidurim. Remember, they not to waste this. Just, I don't know, today it's like print, but Birnbaum put it in one because he didn't write such extensive commentary. Today, Jonathan Sachs writes these beautiful introductions, or Nussan Sherman for Art Scroll to write them beautiful, long introductions and much more explanations. It's the growing of people are more learned and people want more and better. So that's good. Okay, I'm glad to see that Annie also sometimes uses the Hertz. And here you go. All the people still have the Hertz Chumash. These are the old-fashioned shuls. I don't know, in the new shuls, I don't think they have the Hertz Chumash. Okay, let's get back. It's been, of course, a number of weeks since we've been doing the Siddur. We've been doing the Machzor, obviously, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkos. So we'll get back. We were in the, if anybody remembers, I can just probably say what I said 6 weeks ago. Will anybody know? I hope people would know. I hope I would know. I'm not sure I would know, but I have to look at my notes. But so we're in the middle still. Hopefully we'll finish the first paragraph of the Shema. And we were talking, really, we were still in the middle of Pasuk Vishinan Tal Vanecha. We talked, we've mentioned already many times, but it's worth mentioning again. Or, you know, before I get to Shema, let me just say one other thing on the situation in Israel. Remember, way at the beginning, we discussed that there's a well-known debate between the Rambam and the Ramban about the nature of a prayer. I'm not sure if people have remember this or have heard this in other places, maybe. The Rambam believes that prayer is a biblical obligation every day. Once a day, not the way we daven three times a day, and you don't need the whole 19 blessings of the Shemone Esrei, but the idea that we say a little bit of praise, we ask God for certain things, and we pray on the Shevach, Bacha, Shevach, Hoda, and Thanksgiving, the three parts that a Jew has to do every day, and it's supposed to be from the heart, and everybody has their own prayers, and, you know, and we discussed how that developed into our Siddur. But that's a biblical obligation to pray every day. Almost everybody disagrees with the Rambam. The Ramban, Nachmanides, living, born 50 years after the Rambam, says prayer is a rabbinic, prayer is a act of chesed. I've mentioned this many times because I love this Ramban, that prayer is an act of kindness of God, that God allows us to pray. What right do we have to pray? It's a beautiful idea. If we could internalize that we have the opportunity to pray, I think it's hard. And most of it, prayer is a burden at times. So that's, whatever the Ramban says, it's a gift of God, except in an Eitzara, except in a time of great need. As the Torah says, V'kitavo milchama barzachem. Parsha Balocha, when there's a war in your land, you blow the shofarot, that's where Teruah comes from. We have on Rosh Hashanah, and the Ramban says it's a biblical obligation to pray. So everybody agrees, unfortunately, now it's for sure a biblical obligation to pray. And it seems like the Ramban says not only to pray, in other words, when there's a communal need, then the community comes together to pray, meaning praying with the minyan becomes the biblical obligation. Not just, we know you can pray by yourself. It's nice to pray with a minyan. As I mentioned many times, it's not because you can answer Barchu and Kedusha, and it's not related to men or women. Women and men are equally obligated in prayer. Okay, yes, obviously the public roles of prayer are different, but the obligation to pray is no different. Women don't need good health and long life and wealth and peace and justice. So we have to pray equally. There may be reasons. Okay, people are busy. It can be men or women. There may be good reasons you don't daven with a minyan, but davening with a minyan, and there are certain communities where the women are whatever, young girls especially often will go to minyan. That's a beautiful thing. The main reason we go to minyan is because we believe God answers the prayers of a community much more than individuals. Individuals, we're sinners, we're nobodies. As a community, we're amazing. Just look at what's going on. And we're an amazing, amazing people. Sometimes it takes other people to wake us up to how amazing we are, unfortunately. But we're amazing, and that's what we can come to with God. And we're still faithful to God after all that we've been through is an amazing thing. So the Ramban would assume that davening, in a time like this would be a biblical obligation to daven with minyan. So I just wanted to sort of, since we're talking on the Siddur, just to re-point that out. Okay, but let's get back now. We're talking on the Shema, Mishinat Levenacha. So I mentioned that the simple reading of the first paragraph of Shema, of course, is that where it's talking about learning. We're not talking about saying Shema. In other words, the idea of b'shochlecha uvkumecha, when you lie down and when you wake up, that's learning Torah. B'shinantan levanecha, you should teach your children v'dibarta bam and speak in Torah, teach and talk about it. B'shivtecha v'itecha, when you're at home, when you're going on the road, and when you lie down and you get up. So that's really talking about Talmud Torah, which is one view in the Gemara that holds that Shema is only a rabbinic obligation. When you tell that to people often, it's startling, because I think everybody from kindergarten, everybody knows like the basic mitzvah of a Jew. You have to say Shema twice a day. Obviously, Rabbi Akiva died and so many people went to their deaths saying Shema. It's like the most important thing. What do you mean it's a rabbinic mitzvah? It's like, but that's one view in the Talmud. We do accept the view that it is a biblical mitzvah, but that's a drasha. That's like an additional layer of reading of the verse, because like I said, it's clear. It's talking about learning. It's not talking about saying Shema. We were in the middle of that. We spoke about the mitzvah to learn, and I'll just say there's a mitzvah to learn Torah and a mitzvah to know Torah. We, thank God, we've done an amazing job at both. And talk about the maturation, new sidurim, new chumashim, that's because we do an amazing job at learning Torah. The day school system is the crowning glory of the American Jewish community that we built up, hundreds of thousands of kids. Our grandparents, I don't know, depending on how old everybody is, some of your parents, maybe some of you didn't have an opportunity to go to a day school. So that, that is really amazing. The growth in learning is phenomenal, and the growth in knowledge is phenomenal. But I would say a lot of the growth is in learning Torah, not so much in knowing Torah. That's often when I remember a piece in Daf Yomi is amazing for the mitzvah of learning Torah. For the mitzvah of knowing Torah, it's not so great. Because most people, unless you're going to spend 5 hours a day in Daf Yomi, and that's not normal. Nobody has that time. I mean, very few people have that time. So it's too fast a pace. You can't really remember 98% of what you learned. But okay. So but you're learning every day. You pick up some things. You'll remember it 7.5 years later. You'll remember they once spoke about that. Whatever. But they're really two distinct mitzvot. Rav Zevin talks about that when the Gemara says that you can fulfill the mitzvah of learning Torah by saying Shema every day, right? That's exactly what we're talking about. By saying, that's one opinion in the Gemara. You have to learn Torah. That's a mitzvah. Okay, I can learn Torah. I read a verse in the Shema. I've learned Torah. So that we discussed, there's a debate are you allowed to tell that to an ignorant person? Because, I don't have to learn, I'll say Shema. Or maybe it's a mitzvah to tell it to an ignorant person. That's always the debate. When make it too easy, do you want to not let people know, or do you want to, yes, let people know that? But whatever it is, everybody agrees that only fulfills the mitzvah of Talmud Torah to learn Torah. You're not going to know Torah from saying Shema every week, but that's okay. Anyways, but let's get back to the, so we discussed the learning. I want to talk b'shivtecha v'veitecha. I'm pretty sure that's where we got up to. I'm sitting in your home, and it reminded me what, Rav Soloveitchik used to talk about, his grandfather. Rav Soloveitchik talked about his grandfather a lot. I don't think, as far as I know, I'm sure people know better than I don't know if I had once heard they only met him three times in his life. I find that a little hard to believe, but it's not like, he talked to his grandfather every day, you know, like, that's not the way it worked. His grandfather died in 1918. The Rev was born in 1903. So he was 15 years old when his grandfather passed away. I don't exactly know how much day to day. The Rev's real Rebbe was his father. I mean, that's, he talked about all the time. Rav Moshe was his real Rebbe. Rav Chaim is, you know, created the whole system that his father used. But, he would talk about his grandfather that, when you sit at home and when you go out in the street. And he would say most people are different. Their Judaism is very different in the home and when they're on the street. And Rav Soloveitchik said, that's normal. That's not like, it's just human beings. Like you're going to act, you know, outside, you're a little bit more careful and there's social pressure and all kinds of other things. But, you know, in the privacy of your home, it's very different. And, but the Rav would talk about the greatness of his grandfather. He was the same, that his Shmon Esrei, I think that was one of the examples he gave, would be the exact same length of time, whether he was at home, davening at home or davening in shul. I can tell you when I daven at home, my Shmon Esrei is much quicker than when I'm in shul. At home, it's like, it's almost like a, shouldn't say it, but more like a burden and just like get it over there. I got it up and, you know, like something Miss Minion, whatever. But, when you're in shul, it's a whole different thing. It's, you know, so it's very hard to be, you know, to be the same. But that was a special quality in general, how he acted. You know, he didn't put on sort of this like public image and private image, which a little bit is understandable. I mean, the Rav used to talk about that, the part of the greatness of his grandfather. The Gemara says that Rabbi Akiva, when he would daven, and here's the opposite, that, great rabbis have this problem. That when I remember one prominent rabbi, I don't want to mention his name, just whatever. He probably wouldn't mind, but, I heard him say that the day he became a rabbi is the day he stopped davening. Cause he's running the shul. They got 5 minyanim or probably 8 minyanim in the shul on Shabbos. And he's going for that Dvar Torah Dash Kamami. And then he's running around here and quieting, but a sermon, it's hard to daven. And then you can't daven too slowly because the shul waits for you. And it's not nice. It's a tircha. It's a burden on the community when the rabbi takes an extra 5 minutes than everybody else. And sometimes the rabbi says, sometimes Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, I mean, maybe you daven in such shul, where the rabbi will tell the chazan not to wait for him because he wants to daven slowly. Let's say Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. But on a Monday morning, you know, like, it's not going to work. So rabbis have to daven a little more quickly. So the Gemara talks about how Rabbi Akiva, when he davened at home, we would find him, he would start in one corner and in another corner, which is interesting. You're not really supposed to move around, but I guess he was so intent davening. He didn't know what he just was so, involved. He didn't even realize he was moving around. Just looking at the comment for a second. Hold on. When he davened in shul, he would daven much quicker, because he didn't want to be a tircha on the tzibur. So Debbie's pointing out and just saying that davening home is quicker than when shul. I feel the exact opposite, related to females. So that's a very fascinating comment, because I can totally get that, because if you're behind the mechitza, and especially if it's not a friendly mechitza, you feel that's a very important point. I don't know if you know what to say about that. I don't know what to say. I believe we have to build friendly mechitzas. You have to build mechitza today where you can't tell what's the men and the women's, you know, section. That's really the ideal mechitza. The Sri Deish already, Rabbi Yaakov Yechiel Weinberg talked about it. I know it was true in the 50s, where he has one tshuva that you're not allowed to make your son's bar mitzvah fancier than your daughter's bat mitzvah. It's haflaya, I think is the word to use. Discrimination. What do you mean? You're going to make a big party for the boys and not for the girls? Whatever money, whatever, you know, whatever 200 people, however you invite for the sons, the bat mitzvah should be just as glorious as a bar mitzvah. So it's a, for somebody to write that 60 years ago, 70 years ago, that's an amazing thing. When bat mitzvahs, you know, Ramosha was no fan of bat mitzvahs. Okay. But, so that's so he also writes the, I don't think they had mechitzas like this in his lifetime. He writes the mechitzas shouldn't be, it should be where the women feel they can see that, you know, you go to some shuls, you can't even see in the Altnai shul in Prague. They don't even have, they didn't even have a mechitza. It was, then they built a hole in the wall because, well, women went to shul. It's a different world. So you have to have a friend mechitza. Today, the best type of mechitza, I believe, are the mechitzas where they have, where you tuck a walk in and the shul is split mamash in the middle, including the bima. And sort of half the beam is on the men's section, half the beam is on the women's section. I know people being in shuls, Aisha Torah is like this, and you wouldn't know what's the men and the women's section. So then everybody's equal, you know. Okay, I mean, I'm not the woman davening, whatever, that's a whole different issue. But I think what Deb was saying is a very important point that people should be cognizant. The women feel less, less involved in shul. And Simchas Torah is a big example often of this, for sure. So I won't go there, but, it's a big deal. On the other hand, I will say that sometimes it is the opposite. I do agree with you. I usually when I daven at home, I just chuck. But, sometimes, and this was true at the beginning of COVID, and it's even true sometimes today, you know, it tends to be more with Mincha Mari, but, you know, sometimes when I'm at home, I just can concentrate better, or I don't have to worry. I mean, because it's true, minyanim, you know, there's the joke, a minyan, one of the minyanim in our area, they used to joke, the minyan is for people who can't, what is it, if they don't have enough time to daven at home, they can come to shul and daven. Because like the minyans go so fast, you know, those early minyanim at 6:30 in the morning, zoom, they're out in 22 minutes. Whatever. Yeah. So, okay. I totally hear that. And I think, and thank you for that point. And I do agree sometimes. And like I say myself also, sometimes when you're by yourself, you can daven with more kavana. But I don't know. I find in general, I think, and that's also, there's a sense of community. When you the shul, but okay, everybody has their own idea, and that's, by the way, would be a fascinating question, right? People who feel they can daven better at home, is that more important than davening with a minyan? I don't want to get into sort of that like halakhically or anything, but I hear that, and maybe we need both, and so thank you for that. But anyways, but what the Rav pointed out, b'shita chaveitecha v'lata kabedera. Rav Chaim was the same, and most people can't. We're different when we're in crowds. We're social animals, and we act differently when we're among other people. Okay. Another thing just to point out. So, we say, so you can say Shema, you know, doing a somersault. You know, the Gemara talks about, however you're walking, you're walking in the street. The Gemara gives examples of people saying Shema on top of a tree. Why would somebody say Shema on top of a tree? They're tree climbing. Well, why somebody tree climbing and he's going to say Shema? He got up in the morning. He forgot to daven.
They're picking fruit.
Sorry?
Maybe they're picking fruit.
Yeah. Why are they picking fruit?
They're working.
The poor picks fruit. No.
They're working at
sunrise. Right, that's it. You want to daven, you can't daven on your boss's time. It's your problem. You're from on your own time. Don't be from on the boss's time. So in the Mishnah, people went to work before the crack of dawn. It was too early. You can't say Shema until you can recognize somebody without lights. That's the generally accepted view, about a distance of 6 feet, which we assume, let's say, is 40, 45 minutes before sunrise. Davening Shmona Esrei, theoretically, you can say it Amud HaShachar at dawn, which we assume is 72 minutes before sunrise. But Shema requires a little bit later. You normally say it together, but you don't really fulfill Shema until about a half an hour after the earliest time to say Shmona Esrei. This is an important question. You know, in the winter, I don't know if they're going to keep daylight saving time. Have they decided yet? They're talking about keeping permanent daylight saving time. If they do that, davening will be a big mess because, when sun rises at 9 o'clock, I don't know when people are going to daven. But anyway, so people would, go to work and they couldn't daven. Then we get close to sunrise. So they want to say Shema. they can't get off the tree. You can't do that. You're picking apples. So, okay, you can say Shema. We let you say Shema, but say it on the top of the tree. Masha en kein b'tfilah, but for davening, you can't do that. The Amida, the word Amida, you have to stand still, so much so that if a snake is crawling on your leg, you wouldn't even notice, right? The Mishnah says that when you daven Shema, even if the king asks you how you're doing, or a snake is crawling up you, you don't interrupt. And what I don't know, you can interpret in many ways, the halakhic interpretation, but I think what the Mishnah is trying to teach us is you should be so intent when you say Shema Amida, you don't notice that there's a snake on your leg. Obviously, the halakha is if it's some poisonous snake, you can go. And obviously, if there's a king there and you notice him, you can respond like halakhically, chop your head off. But I shouldn't use that terms to these days, unfortunately. But the idea is that you won't even notice in Amida, you're so intensely davening, focused. Shema is the exact opposite. Belechtecha baderech. You do it naturally on the way. And I think it's really a beautiful idea. Two ways of worshiping God in our natural, you know, as we're walking to the office or we're getting out of our car, whatever we're doing. That's one way, the day-to-day way. And then the Amida, where we have to stand still, everything stops. We have to totally focus. So the Shema and Shemon Esrei in these ways are very opposite forms of getting close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's the Gemara talk, B'shivtech b'lech lecha b'derech. Just normal, you can walking in the street, you can say Shema. And the Mishnah has a lot of examples because it was much more necessary. Today, our schedules of life are very different. So people don't have that issue that though they can't daven, you know, they have to before the crack of dawn. It's not usually an issue. So, but that's, when you lie down and when you get up, I don't know if he mentioned that we yet to discuss. I really don't remember Rabbi Tarfon's view that does not just mean at night and in the morning when you're going to sleep and when you get up. It means how you have to say Shema, that you have to say Shema at night lying in bed and you have to say Shema in the morning standing up. It's a posture thing. And we know, everybody knows that. You know, people, how you carry yourself, how you stand, impacts on how you do. Even if nobody sees you, like I don't know what all the rules are on radio shows, but I think some of the radio announcers, they used to have things they had to wear in the olden days. They had to wear a suit and tie too, because how you dress impacts on. Nobody sees you on the radio. It doesn't matter. There's certain, when you're in a certain posture, you act a certain way. So Rabbi Tarfon is of the opinion. Good. I'm glad they're not going to change it. Protests for that. But, so Rabbi Tarfon says you have to do lying down and standing up. It's like an amazing thing. And then the Gemara, I'm sorry, that's not Rabbi Tarfon. It's Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai says that in the first parak in Brachot. The Mishnah then continues that Rabbi Tarfon, who is a student of the Beit Shammai, he followed the approach of Beit Shammai. He was walking in the street once and it got dark. The Gemara didn't like when people went out at night in ancient times so much. It was getting that he had to say Shema. So he lied down on the street and he says, Listim, burglars, robbers, whatever, almost killed him. So he came in, look, he came in telling all his colleagues, look how beautifully, how intense. I love God so much. Even though I was walking in the middle of the street, I lied down in the street so I could say Shema lying down in the street. And the rabbis basically said, I'm saying it in a not nice way, you're an idiot. He said, Kedai hayita lachobat, you should have been killed. That you violated Beit Hillel. What are you, crazy out of your mind? Putting your life at risk to lie down in the middle of the street, in the middle of the dark? No, that's not a heter mitzvah. It's an amazing thing. You know, the whole exchange is fascinating, but that's in the first parak in Masechet Brachot, where the Gemara talks about that. But it's an interesting thing that is, your posture is very important for how one, says Shema. We, of course, obviously don't follow that view of Beit Shammai. And in other words, each one, and then I have to interpret how does Belech Lecha Baderech mean, but we follow that. I mean, it just means say it in the morning and in the evening. And as I mentioned, Shema is pretty much the only mitzvah we have, the only ritual that we have to do morning and in the day and the night. Every mitzvah is either a daytime mitzvah or a nighttime mitzvah. We don't have any mitzvot that are both. Having matzah is only at night. Sitting in the sukkah is only at night, the obligation. Most mitzvah are only in the day. Shofar, lulav, korbanos. Most mitzvot are only in day. Even
what about benching?
Benching is not connected into time. And any mitzvah that has a time component to it. Benching is when you eat. Tzedakah is day and night. And mezuzah is day and night. But it means any mitzvah that is a specific time is only in the morning and evening. Because the morning and evening represent, again, we don't have this so much today. We have light all the time. But in the morning and night, one represents hope, one represents fear. And I think we did discuss this a little bit. So the Shema, we're saying it in two different moods. There are two different approaches to God. There's the day is confident. Avram Davins, you know, Shachrit is confident. Yaakov, he's running away from Esav. That's when Marib comes from. It's all nervousness. Night always represents fear. That's Emet ve'emuna. We say Emet ve'yatziv in the morning. You know, we anchored, we're confident. Yape, tov, mekubal, you know, the 15 nice adjectives we say. That's in the morning. It's bright. But at night, it's Emet ve'emuna. At night, it's more faith. Like, and of course, you can say, like now, the daytime can be like the night also. And then we pray at the Seder, we say that the night will be like day. In other words, in the redemption, the things are going well, the night turns into day, and sometimes the day turns into night. But really, mitzvot are generally either day or night. And a brief milah and can only be in the daytime, all mitzvot. Even, and so everybody always asks me, Mikra Megillah, so no. Mikma Megillah in the Mishnah, the Megillah was only read in the daytime. The Mishnah makes no mention of reading Megillah at night. That's mentioned in the Gemara only. I don't say only in the Gemara, but it means it was a later day. That's how the commentaries explain it. It was a later day innovation to read the Megillah at night. And it's less important. The real mitzvah is to read it at night. But anyways, that's we have the Shema. Okay. The other thing I'll just say, when we're traveling. So I just think, you know, when a person travels, I mean, I'm saying this now, you know, I started traveling when Torah Motion did all these, you know, started doing trips back in 2011. And I've often mentioned how traveling opens up your eyes to so many different things. To, you know, it's very important to see the world. Rav Hirsch explained, Shimshon Raphael Hirsch explained that right before Yitzchak was born, Avram moved to Gerar. Right? If you remember that verse, Avram moves to Gerar. So Rabbi Hirsch said, who cares? Like, why does Hirsch say he moved to Gerar? So Rav Hirsch explains that Gerar was like a capital city. It was like, that was the big thing. Avram was living in a hick town, and he didn't want Yitzchak to grow up in a hick town. It's an amazing idea that he says. It's more to be exposed to, grow up in a whatever. You know what I mean? It's the reason the Jewish people had to be slaves in Egypt. Why do we have to be slaves in Egypt? Why not in who knows where? Because Egypt was the most advanced country. God wanted us to see the most advanced country in the world because the Jewish people are supposed to be the most advanced people. This is our wisdom. We spoke about that. Atah HaRaita is right near there because this is our wisdom for the nation. The people said, wow, the Jewish people are amazing. And so we had to experience greatness. And so we had to go to Egypt. There's lots of greatness. At the same time, we also have to realize that greatness in technology and architecture and pyramids and all that has no, there's no correlation between greatness in morality, Germany. And we all know this. So both those lessons are crucial, but God wanted us to see the greatness of Egypt. So Avram moved to Gerar. Traveling, seeing other things is very good. It opens the mind and exposes you. And you want to, I think that's really, this of course, the more broad interpretation of Belechtecha Baderech. You want to worship God. You want to accept God. Travel a little bit. See the world. See God in different manifestation. And one of the things that I've gained so much from the travels, and before we went, I'm not complaining at all. I never had a big desire to travel. I didn't go to, I was in Europe once. I had been nowhere really. I'd been to Europe after my year in yeshiva and right after we got married. And that was the only two times I was in Europe. And I had only been in England. I hadn't been to anywhere. I went to Israel and whatever, to New York and Florida three times in my life or something. But now I've been to, you know, Spain, Morocco, Greece, all these countries I've been to. And you see different Jewish communities and it's eye-opening. And I actually think it also is... it should give you more quote unquote tolerance for other people. You see that, you know, the Ashkenazic way we live our life, or the way, you know, this sort of Lithuanian approach, that's just one small approach to Judaism. Maybe a big approach today in terms of numbers, but you see different practices and different ways of doing things. And it's a beautiful thing to say. So I think that's part of Belech Lecha Bederech. You want to say Shema, you should say Shema at home, B'shivtecha v'veitecha, your own traditions, your own way of doing things, but you also got to get out in the world. You got to go Belech Lecha Bederech, and you got to think at different times, different historical times. You have to be cognizant of the day times in Jewish history, the night times of Jewish history. Do we stand for Shema? Yes. So somebody wrote me privately, you should lie down at night. According to Beit Shammai, we lie down at night and we do not stand for Shema. No. Beit Shammai would say in the morning, you have to stand. That we stand for the Amidah. That's why it's called Amidah. No, the Shema, the Gemara says, Belech Lecha Bederech. You can say it, I said before, I think doing a somersault on the top of a tree. Yeah. You don't need, the Gemara even has a whole discussion. How much do you have to have Kavana for? How much do you have to really be focused on? So some been just the first verse. Some say a little bit more, whatever. In other words, Shema just is sort of, you know, it's like, I don't want to say it's a rote thing. You're supposed to be accepting the yoke of heaven, but it's not, the Gemara is very lenient. It wasn't really focusing. Okay. Just a little bit, you know, and, you don't have to say so much of the Shema, and you can say it in any manner. I think that's why the way I'm understanding it, it's sort of interpreting that it should be our natural way of doing it. I don't have to think about it. There is something beautiful that, in other words, maybe not, I don't know if beautiful is the right word, where sometimes, you know, it's just by rote, like like I walk out of the washroom, and my lips move. Am I thinking, oh, God has created all this, you know, beautiful body that works amazingly? No, it's just sort of like, I don't even know what I'm saying. Did I say, it's just sort of an instinctive reaction. So on one level, that's very nice. I remember, I think, when I was in Yeshiva, I'm not mistaken, I think it was Rabbi Parnas once mentioned, I think I heard this story that he was a Rebbe in Yeshiva. I don't think he's well now. I think he's still living, but would be in his 90s probably by now. But he was, when I came to Yeshiva, he was a Rebbe there. And I think it was he who said that he was davening mincha when he found out his mother died or something. Like they whispered in his ear in the middle of davening, and he sort of had a whole debate. Did he have to stop in the middle of the davening or not? Because he's an Avel. And a lot of it, and I remember he was sort of discussing doing mitzvot by rote. We don't even think about it. And, you know, it's just like how much, in other words, you have to, he said, when you can't do a mitzvah, as an onen can't do a mitzvah, you have to be cognizant of what you're doing. You have to remember, before I eat, I can't make a bracha. When, God forbid, somebody's an onen. And often that's harder to do because you make the bracha without thinking about it. So is that good or bad? That I normally make the bracha, I don't even think about it. But now that someone can't make the bracha, they have to think more. So that's just an interesting idea. Kind of like Chaim Soloveitchik in his article, Rupture and Reconstruction. What, you think I put on tzitzis in the morning? Think I'm thinking about putting on tzitzis? I don't want to say it, but, you know, I put on this and that, and I put on tzitzis. You know, it's just how you get dressed in the morning. I don't think about it. It's just, I don't know, maybe when I put on my talis, I think about it a little bit more. So it's just that this idea of Belech Lecha Bederech represents on a certain level the habit forming, and that's not all bad. That is not all bad. And the Amidah represents, you have to focus much more. Okay, let's go on a little bit. So that's, now let's get into Tefillin, because that's the next verse. Start from the Yorah Yedecha V'yilutot Avot Beinenecha. So on a Tefillin, what should we say? Tefillin is the sign of the, you know, of the Jewish people. Now, a sign, an important sign of the Jewish people. We don't wear it on Shabbos because, it's, you know, we have another sign. So I guess maybe I'll start with, I don't know, the obvious question. Okay. So why do women not wear tefillin? Why? This is one of the biggies. You know, I mentioned 99% of mitzvot apply equally to men. Even davening is equal men and women, except that, for reasons that we're not going to get into now, but it's an important discussion, hopefully one day, about why traditionally we assume a minion is only 10 men. Traditionally, and, you know, and I don't have to tell people here that obviously whether women can have aliyot has become an issue in recent years. And there clearly, even though it's not mainstream orthodoxy, there clearly are, it's not some view that was made up. There's some, you know, you can put together a pretty strong source-based argument, but minyan you don't really have that. Young women. What about women and tefillin? Why do women not wear tefillin? So this is one of the biggies. You know, women don't wear tefillin. Why? So you'll tell me it's a mitzvah to seisha zman grama. It's a time-bound positive commandment, which is also very difficult to understand why women are exempt. The standard reason, of course, of the Abu Draham, the reason I think most people were taught at a young age, because women are very busy. They're taking care of the kids. They can't be somewhere at a specific time. The problem with that answer, as Saul Berman points out in his article in Tradition about this many years ago, is that, first of all, a woman's raising kids maybe a quarter of her life if she has 8 kids. Please God, a woman lives to be 85 years old, 90 years old. So you're raising kids from 25 to 45. Like, you know, this, your kids, like once your youngest kids is in grade 1, like what do you mean? You don't, and what about women, and what about before you married and afterwards, and the women don't get married? I mean, unfortunately, whatever. So, and what about the 15 exceptions? The woman has to go to shul on Purim to hear the Megillah, and she has to light Hanukkah candles, and she has to make Kiddush on Shabbos. So it is a very, that reason doesn't go very far. Why? And then Rabbi Hirsch gives the apologetical reason that women don't need these mitzvot. Women are on a higher spiritual level than men, and which may be true, therefore these mitzvot are needed to, like, we need like our vitamins. The men need their power bars and whatever. So tefillin gives us that oomph. I don't know. And women don't need that. I don't know. I find that to be an apologetical reason, but what do I know? Anyways, that's, I'm just raising the issue. Maybe I'm doing more raising the issue without giving sort of answers, but the Mishnah says that, the ones that aren't exceptions, women are exempt from time-bound mitzvot. And there is no, as far as I know, if somebody has a really phenomenal explanation, I'd love to hear it, because I know people have struggled. And that's was, Saul Berman, Rabbi Saul Berman, wrote, not many years ago, but a 40, 50 page article, if I remember correctly. Maybe it was, I don't remember exactly how long it was, but why is it, and trying to analyze it and trying to answer all these issues. But we know this is the area, somehow time. It's the same way Rosh Chodesh is like a woman's holiday. There's something about time and women that are, maybe it's related to their menstrual cycle. Maybe it's just related to their biological clock. I don't know exactly, but the halacha has this idea that when it comes to time-bound mitzvot, and there are really very few of them. Okay, the lifetime was shorter. Okay, still, until you got married, you were 20 years old or whatever. I don't know. But so there seems to be something, but I would say I don't have an exact explanation. No. So for most of the mitzvot, they're not so many. They're really not so many. For shofar, lulav, and sukkah, the women are exempt. Those are three of the biggies. No big deal. So women go to your shofar. Women go to sit in sukkah. We make lulav. And we make a bracha. They say the Asher Kishan Mitzvah, Ashkenazim at least, make the bracha, even though she's not literally commanded. She's part of the command, and she wants to involve herself in the command to hear shofar, beautiful. The only two mitzvot that we, I'd say one and a half mitzvot, the only one and a half mitzvot that we frown on a woman observing are tefillin is the one, and tzitzis is the half. Okay, so since this is in the third paragraph of the Shema, but we can talk about it now. Why don't women traditionally wear tzitzit? So that, I don't know, do any of your shuls, has anybody go to an Orthodox shul? I mean, obviously to a non-Orthodox shul, but anybody go to an Orthodox shul where there are women who wear a talit? I'm just curious. Anybody experience that?
Once in a blue moon, somebody walks in.
They had it once at chat. They don't have it now. Yesterday we had 10 girls at Minyan chat, the chat Minyan. You know, but we did have a number of years ago that, a girl came wearing a talit. We're like a non-denominational school, although the Minyan is Orthodox and then with a mechitza. But so there was a girl who was wearing a talit. And I remember in the school sent a letter. We respect everybody, and you know, nobody should, God forbid, say anything to her, which of course I agree. And whatever. Now, it's really and it's certain strain. So yeah, and it's become, you know, people fight about it, unfortunately, tragically. But I'll just tell you what it says in the Rama. We'll start with him. We'll suffice with what he says. Rav Moshe Isserles, the final authority, so to speak, almost, of Ashkenazic Jewry, Poland, 16th century. His comments are included in the Shulchan Aruch, and he's like the, you know, the, that's where we turn to. Obviously, later, they, things that come up later, but the Rama, the, so Rav Moshe Isserles from Krakow explains that, you know why? Because, men don't have to wear tzitzis. Men don't have to wear tzitzis. Why not? Because you only have to wear tzitzis. You have a four-cornered garment. Who says you have to wear a four-cornered garment? You don't have to wear a four-cornered garment. So, we're so, religious. We love God so much. So we go out of our way. We spend $100 and we buy a four-cornered garment to put it on so we can do tzitzis. But there's no obligation for a man to wear tzitzis. Everybody agrees with that, by the way. It may sound, to some people it may sound a little strange, but there's absolutely no obligation, which is why the custom is in Ashkenazic circles, many of them, that men don't wear a talis till their bar mitzvah. So even they wear a talit katan, but they don't wear it. Well, what do you mean? We don't, I have a minhag, I'm not going to put on tefillin until I get married. You know, so because you don't have to wear it. So the Rama said, no, the men don't have to do it really either. They do it, but okay. So the women developed the custom. They're not going to do it at all because even the men don't have to. That's why I say it's like half frowning upon it. Today it would be frowned upon, but halakhically, there's really no real issue as far as I know. And I guess you can quote me on this, but from a pure halakhic point of view, and we don't always do things from a pure halakhic point of view, but there's really no issue with the woman putting on a talit. What about tefillin? So everybody knows, I'm sure most people know, Rashi's daughter put on tefillin, right? And Micha bat Shaul, the Gemara says, Micha, the daughter of Shaul HaMelech, put on tefillin. And there's a debate, is that a good thing or not a good thing? That's really the issue, if you want to read about it. Maybe it is good, maybe it's wonderful. Woman puts on tefillin if she wants to. The standard view, and it's quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, is the word is mochim bi'adam, I think. We protest. It's not forbidden. Because how can you say it's forbidden for a woman to put on tefillin? It's not forbidden. But it's not a good idea. We'd say, no, don't do it. So now, obviously, it's a little, like a lot of things, there'll be exceptions. Why is it not a good idea? So the basic reason, I said many times, but people have to understand this. Because really, we don't want men to put on tefillin. If it was up to the rabbis, men wouldn't put on tefillin either. Tefillin are so special. You're wearing a Sefer Torah, part of a Sefer Torah on your head and on your arm, wearing something written with meticulousness on a cloth and a sofer and God's name, and you're actually attaching it to your body. Wow. You have got to be on such a level. You cannot think about anything that unrelated to spiritual matters. You cannot have any bodily, you know, emissions, whatever. You have to have a clean body, a clean mind. Who can do that? Almost nobody can do that. So really the rabbis don't want you wearing tefillin. But what can they do? The God demands we wear tefillin. Apparently, even if we don't do it so well, the Torah wants us at least a little bit of the day. So what did the rabbis do? The rabbis said, so you know what? You have to daven every day. Davening and tefillin are unrelated. Davening and tefillin have nothing to do with each other. That's a very, very important point. They have nothing to do with each other. But since presumably when a person is davening, that's a big, big presumption, but in theory, presumably, when you're davening, so you're more focused, you are thinking about God. Ah, so that's the time to put on tefillin, you know, so hopefully during that half an hour in the morning or 20 minutes, depending if you're davening at home or in the minyan, whatever, how fast you're davening. So for those few minutes, you can put on tefillin, but because we have no choice. You want to wear tefillin all day? No. Who are you to wear tefillin all day? Just like a woman. So the only difference is the half an hour in the morning. That, that, like I said, so since we don't really want men wearing tefillin, so why should women get involved? Who needs it? That's really, maybe people don't like this answer, whatever, but I think that's that's how I understand why, which generally frowned upon. But like all these things, since it's not prohibited, there are always going to be exceptions. Maybe Rashi's daughter. Yeah, better. Maybe, and Rav Avigdor Nevensol. Rav Avigdor Nevensol, the Rav of the old city, and he was my Rebbe in Yeshiva HaKotel when I was there. He is a tzaddik, one of the great tzaddikim of this world. I don't know if most people have heard of him. Everybody's heard of Rav Avigdor Nevensol. So most people have heard. Okay. Yeah, a lot of people may not have. He's such an anav, such a humble person who is a chavrut of Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach. His father was the state controller of Israel. He comes from a well-to-do family, lives in a beautiful apartment when I was in yeshiva in the old city. Imamish is at Tzadik Gamur. He was Rebbe. He always sat in the back of the base medrash. He didn't sit like everybody else up front. He wore tefillin all day. So humble and so just an amazing person. And no, you know, a tremendous Talmud Chacham. So he wears tefillin all day. Okay. When you're Rebbe Victor Nevinsohn, you can wear tefillin all day. So we have, and if you're Rashi's daughter, I don't know what Rashi's daughter, not who knows it's even true, you know, but anyway, so that's why, the tefillin, that's the general. So I don't have any comments. I'd like to hear the same way Debbie, you said before, you know, since you feel a little bit like behind the mechitz, it's hard to daven in shul. I don't know. Does not putting on tefillin bother anybody? Like, I think, you know, if you talk to some men after a while, you'll see you're lucky, you know, not put on tefillin. Maybe I shouldn't say it like that, but putting on tefillin, it should be something that's beautiful, but it is often, I don't want to say it's a pain, God forbid, but it is sometimes not convenient. What are we saying? You know, that's without a doubt. So I don't know. Let's see if anybody has any comments. Okay. Just that. I'll take the other ones. Why does Orthodoxy treat exempt and forbidden? I should read the questions at the end as they're not synonymous, right? That's why I'm very careful to point to, it's not exempt. Exempt and forbidden. No, it's generally what they do is sometimes like something like tefillin. I think you have to be very careful. The Rambam says, if you claim a rabbinic mitzvah is a biblical mitzvah, if you say Chalav Yisrael is just as important as one of the basic rules of kashrut, like meat and milk or whatever, that's a violation of the biblical prohibition of adding to the Torah. The rabbis are allowed to, under limited circumstances, the rabbis are allowed to add mitzvot and add prohibitions, you know, make a fence around the Torah. Rabbi Shrei was talking about that last night. Why was Eve saying, I'm not going to touch it? Why wasn't that a proper fence? You see, often fences are not good. We have a limited ability to add things to the Torah, but we have to be within certain parameters. And if you, but it has to be 100% clear that it's not the same as the Torah. And people don't do this anymore. We live in a generation, we don't make distinction about anything. The world doesn't make distinction between freedom fighters and terrorists. Now, at least this week, the world's woken up, much of the world, a little bit. Making distinctions is the essence of being an intelligent person. That's why we say Havdalah in Chon Ein Dat. That's what the Gemara says. When we say Havdalah in the Brach of intelligence, making distinctions is the mark of an intelligent person. And we live in a generation where people don't like to make this 30-second soundbite. You don't have time to make distinction. So I try to be very, very careful. Is it a custom? Is it a rabbinic law? Is it not even, Psukei Dezimra is not even a custom. It's lower than a custom. It's midat chasidut. It's an act of piety. And therefore you can skip it if you're in a hurry. Maybe it's better to skip it if you only have 20 minutes to daven. So skip Psukei Dezimra. Say Shman Amida with more intentions. You have to know these things. It's what's a minhag? And it's very important to know what's forbidden. You can say it's permissible, but we don't want to do it. That's all. Halacha takes in, we take social policy and social norms into consideration. That's okay, but you have to let people know. You have to let people know, for example, take a more, you have to let people know, maybe a woman is allowed to have an aliyah. For sure, halakhni. But for social reasons, it's a break of 2,000 years of tradition, blah, blah, blah. Whatever reason, and maybe that's very valid. Maybe we don't do it. Okay. But you have to be clear what's the halakha and what's not the halakha. So, and it's something we don't do often enough. So that's what I'm saying. There is no halakha that is forbidden for a woman to wear tefillin. I think if you say that, you violate the prohibition almost of Baltosif, sort of. The Shulchan Aruch and the Shulchan Aruch, obviously, Rav Yosef Karo is going to be very careful about it. Mochim biyadam. We protest. It's a bad idea. Women shouldn't put on tefillin, but it's not forbidden. And by tzitzit, it's not even, we don't protest. We are not going to protest when we're tzitzit. Just they don't put on tzitzit because the men don't really put on tzitzit or they don't have to. So it is very important to keep these distinctions, in line, but that is the practice. Just, but okay, maybe, I wanted to, okay, just very quickly, I say one thing. Maybe next week, because I didn't really talk about tefillin at all. I just talked about sort of the external issue, but I think whatever. I thought it was important to address. If you don't think so, you can let me know. But, and then we talk about putting a mezuzah. And I just want you to think, we'll pick up on this next week because I want to go through the questions. Is the idea of putting a mezuzah, it's such a strange mitzvah. We didn't put something on your house. I understand tefillin on my arm, tefillin on my head, right? And that's also, I'll say one more thing before I get, it's weird at the mezuzah. One thing I didn't say, what's the difference between the hand tefillin and the head tefillin? What's the basic difference between tefillin on the hand?
The order of the parashia?
No, that's the machloket Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. Everybody asked what happened before them, the order of the parashia, but the order, the same as
separation into four different parashia.
Right. The head is in four, what's it called? Not parchment. I guess it is four parchments. In four parchments.
Compartments.
Thank you, Rabbi Alman. Yes, in four compartments. And the hand filling is just one long clap written up. Well, what's the difference between that? I think so. I just heard one beautiful idea. And the idea is that when it comes to the hand represents action, what we do. All Jews have to do. I mean, you know, we have our own customs, but we all follow the same Torah, the same halakhic system, please God, hopefully. So the hand represents, it's all, you know, we're all together. The head, we think very differently. Each body got four. We I sometimes don't agree with myself, you know. We everybody thinks differently. We want people to think differently. Yeah, actions, that's okay. We have to have a system because otherwise our community falls apart. So the halakha demands a certain sense of obedience. But when it comes to thought, people are very different how they think. And we extol that. We think that's a beautiful thing. I don't know. I think it's a very simple but plain idea. I mean, why is the tefillin like that? The hand tefillin's one and the head tefillin are four. But, and then we have a mitzvah on the house. So we'll pick up next week maybe is sort of linking this to, if you want to think about it, maybe you'll come up with good explanation. The only other time really in the Torah besides, a mitzvah, the leper of the house, whatever, but the main time we talk about a house is on Pesach. Perek, the 12th perek in Shmot, what Rashi says the Chumash should open with, right? Rashi, why does the Torah not begin with chapter 12, the first mitzvah, HaKodesh Hazeh, and then all on the Korban Pesach, talks about bite. So I think there, and clearly the mezuzah is linked to Pesach because, you know, we had to put blood on the doorpost, now we put a mezuzah on the doorpost. But we can pick up with this, please God, a little next week. We should hear better news. And then we can move into the second paragraph of the Shema. But let me just see the questions I did not get to, I think. Yeah, so we talked about the Birnbaum at the beginning. Okay, thank you. After Chumashim or Hertz, yeah, we talked about that. I use the Jonathan Sachs scoring, yes. Okay, Kemp Mill Jewish community, thank God, has grown so much. I've been here since the 70s. Yeah, now we have shul. Yeah, of course. So right. When I was in Kemp Mill, they probably had 1 million Sunday morning, 6:30, and now they have 5 minyanim. I'm saying it struck me at the time that they didn't have a late minyan. They, you know, Sunday is that's not a Jewish day. Okay, and we assume it's, listen, Rav Soloveitchik celebrated Thanksgiving. We assume it's convenient. It's a wonderful thing. I wish Israel had a Sunday. I think it would do a lot of good for a lot of reasons. But no, that's, isn't there a mitzvah to teach Torah? Absolutely. I would even say the Torah always describes a mitzvah to learn as a mitzvah to actually teach. Vishinantan lefanecha. And then in the second paragraph of the Shema, b'limadatam atam epenechem, you should teach your children. And the Gemara says only those who are taught are, well, those who are obligated to learn or have to teach. I forget the phraseology of the Talmud. If you're obligated to learn, you're obligated to teach. And then if you're taught, you're obligated to learn. In other words, teaching and learning go together, right? The idea that you would learn Torah just for your own personal growth and not share that Torah, that's a terrible thing. And that's why the issues came up in Halakha on copyright. Can you copyright any parts of Torah? And a lot of people not so simple. That was the big debates when the printing press was first invented and people had to spend a lot of money. That was the famous tshuva of the Ramban, the Katzenbogen family, big issues. I have to look it up again, all the details. But in the Mishnah Torah, somebody printed it and somebody came in and printed a cheaper version. They put cherem, all the haskamot before like the 20th century, the haskamot that the rabbinic approbations at the beginning of the books were always copyright laws, that this person invested a lot of money and no one is allowed to buy another version of the book. And that wasn't done. In other words, in theory, we want to disseminate Torah, but the feeling was, if you spend a lot of money printing, no one will print the book if you're afraid somebody can use your technology a little bit better and then, you know, print it for a lot cheaper. But the idea is to spread more Torah. And so sometimes by spreading more Torah, you have to limit it for economic reasons. That was fascinating discussions in the 16th century, which we don't really have anymore. But yes, there's a tremendous mitzvah to teach Torah, and you have an obligation. You can't teach Torah to yourself, and you're not allowed to keep Torah to yourself. That has other applications too. At home being quicker, yeah, that's what we spoke about. I don't know where I get check marks. Interesting. The one-on-one private conversation with Shem lends itself to taking long. Absolutely. I hear that and I agree. And I think in many ways it's very beautiful. Okay. That some people are more inspired when they're alone and some people are with shul. But the idea is the minyan, even if you're a little bit less inspired, the minyan has an impact that it's Klal Yisrael come together. They will not change. I hope not. Right. There should protest. Right. How you hold your body, how you are dressed impacts on davening. Absolutely. Praying Shema consciously with intent through devotion. Listen, that's why the yeshiva world is, you know, you have to wear a black hat, whatever. There are certain things. It's not like, yes, how you dress is important. Rav Shachna used to tell us the gartel of today is a tie. He didn't go for, I never asked him. But the gartel, we assume, is to separate the upper and the lower body, sort of the physical and the spiritual. And so we see we do that with a belt today. They wore a long coat. You know, they didn't have pants and shirts. It was sort of one long, you know, like a curtain, whatever. And then so the gartel, they have to tie. So we dress differently. That's why we assume we don't need a gartel. But Rav Shachter was basically told us the gartel just means you're fully dressed. You're fully dressed, got your belt on. So he said today was in the 80s. Today it's not like that. Today fully dressed means to wear a tie. You should wear a tie because that's fully dressed. Today, I don't know. Things change. But yes, how you dress, how you hold your body, posture is important. And that's what the Shema is saying. I don't know exactly where to draw the line and what, but yes. Okay. This is a practice.
Can I share with you Absolutely. One thought? I'm reading a book called The Country of the Blind.
Okay.
And it's about a person becoming blind. And he writes that there is a National Foundation for the Blind and they have a yearly convention. And for the last night for the banquet, everybody dresses up. And he asks, if nobody can see, what's the purpose in dressing up?
I get it. Okay.
He said, because people feel different.
Correct. Absolutely. Of course you feel different when you dress up. When they send out a wedding, black tie only, tuxedo, there's something about that. It creates a mood. That's why people do it. So, einachinami. And that's why the halacha is you have to dress differently on Shabbos and even differently on Yom Tov. People who know me, who see me on Yom Tov, know I have this weird custom. I wear my cufflinks and suspenders only on Yom Tov. I wear white shirts only on Shabbos. And I wear, and then on Yom Tov, I have like suspenders, I don't know why, and cufflinks, you know, like nice cufflinks. That's my Yom Tov dress, Shabbos, and I wear a tie only on Shabbos, you know, whatever. There isn't anything. Yom Tov is even more special. Yom Kippur may be even more special, perhaps. We don't have eating, fooding. Yeah, these things are important. Practice based assumption about the relationship of men and women to Hashem, right? I think you're referring white tefillin are not, right, that women don't have to wear it. I assume, Janine, that's what you're referring to. Lifespan, what's much shorter? I dress that, but I still, it doesn't fully address the issue. Oh, may 25 years. Okay, I find that hard because, again, the Torah is for all time. And maybe that explanation worked better back then, but today it's harder to say that explanation. You think most women put in tefillin there are those who have to prove their feminist credentials? That may be true, but it doesn't have to be true. I think that can sometimes be sometimes that's unfair. Sometimes these women are much more sincere than the men. And believe me, I usually find the one time I attended a partnership minyan, I was invited to a simcha, the davening was much quieter. And I found it actually much more, in a sense of, I found the davening more serious than the shul, the people talk more. Like often these people who you think are, maybe there may be feminist things. Okay. I don't know. Is that necessarily terrible? I don't know. Depends how it applies itself. But I never like to ascribe motives to other people. I can't even ascribe motives to what I do. So I for sure can't ascribe motives to other people. people. So, but yes, there may be some of that. So it's an important discussion, but I don't think you can say, I don't think it's up to a rabbi to say a woman can't do that because she's not properly motivated. You yourself have to decide, am I properly motivated? When we discuss, you should do a chumra, stringencies. Only we're doing the basics. Right? When you ask Rav Shach, does she do the stringency? Say, are you on that level? Are you doing the basic? That's up for you to decide. Nobody else can decide where you should be, where you should put these stringencies. But okay, we discussed exempt, forbidden. Men need tefillin to tell them to connect their brains with their hearts. Women don't need that. Yeah, that's what I was saying, is basically Shinshall Hirsch. Even answer. Maybe it works for some people. I think some people would reject that answer. I don't know. The Torah doesn't tell us, but yes, some. Listen, men and women are different. That's what the Torah is saying. Obviously, men and women are different. That's why this week's Parsha, you know, God created man and then he created woman. Is there connected? Okay. Kriyat Shema Alamita, sort of. Kriyat Shema Alamita v'shavach, no. In other words, we say Kriyat Shema Alamita when we go to bed at night, but it's not you don't have to say it lying down in bed. That's not a part of b'shavachah. The Gemara discussed the extra protection and et cetera. And according to Rashi, when you say Shema early in the summer, when you daven at the 7 o'clock minyan in the summer, you don't have to repeat the whole Shemona Esrei. Kriyat Shema Alamita will fulfill that obligation. That view is not generally accepted, but Rashi in the first page of the Talmud, Bracha 2a, that's what Rashi says. Well, they always used to daven early. And then in Europe, they did it all week because people didn't go out at night. So when they say Shema, you have to say Shema at night. It's okay. They say Kriyat Shema Alamita. It's one paragraph is fine. Today, they normally announce in Shul, you should say all three. Okay. The Shulchan Aruch 37.2 brings that no longer custom. You're correct. That's right. Because of that, we're not supposed to wear tefillin all day. I don't think it was in the Middle Ages, people were tefillin all day. As a matter of fact, Tosfot, I think the Bali Tosfot talk about many people in France and Germany didn't put on tefillin ever at all. It was a neglected mitzvah for a lot of people for a lot of time, tefillin. Interesting enough. A person should try to wear tefillin. Yeah, in theory to wear tefillin all day, but, it's not a good idea. So in theory, you know, and if men could wear tefillin all day, probably women, there'd be less hesitation to allowing women to wear tefillin. In other words, I think the two are connected. What about putting the hand tefillin in the left hand? And so, you know what? I have to go teach in 5 minutes less. So, if you're left handed, we'll discuss why does somebody put it? Let me just mark that down. Why do you put tefillin on our weaker hand? I mean, go to the right, left handed person. Yeah, it's interesting. Okay. Please God, I'll just mention that for a couple minutes next week. In the Reform Shul davening, do bat mitzvah girls wear tefillin in the week? I have no idea. And, I would hope they would in a sense. In other words, it's like the same way when, I'll end with this one story. When the Reform rabbi, I think I told you the story, wanted to introduce lulav and etrog to shul. And there was a big fight. The rabbi wanted it. People were against it many years ago. Somebody told me the story. And he called the Orthodox rabbi. He said, do you take lulav and etrog on Shabbos? And he said, no, I can't take lulav and etrog on Shabbos. And the person who was an Orthodox rabbi telling me the story said, what an idiot that rabbi was. So yes, son, these are Reform Jews. They're driving to shul on Shabbos. They have one day yontem. We're going to worry they may carry their lulav and etrog for amud. Are you out of your mind? If the Reform rabbis, they're going to shul for yontem, let them take the lulav and etrog on Shabbos. So you got to understand, you got to know who you're talking to. Wait, Rav Lingzi says, obviously we have to have people drive to shul on Shabbos, then stay home and watch television. Everybody agrees with that. That's what Rav Slichting said. Who in their right mind can say it's better for a Jew in Albuquerque? That's the what he gives, to stay at home rather than drive to shul on Saturday morning. But they're going to watch television. That's better than driving to shul. Rav Soloveitchik, not to drive. For an Orthodox person, obviously you don't drive to shul. You stay at home daven. When you have to know who you're dealing with. So I would actually, if the girls, the Reform girls want to put on tefillin, in a sense, you have to realize that's the world we live in. Okay, everybody, we should hear good news. Shabbat Shalom, everybody should be really, hopefully that they're learning. We should all improve our davening, our learning, most importantly, our Bein Adam, L'chavei Ro, our interactions with other people, and should be a sfud in Shemayim. We should hear Besorot Tova, and I want to wish everybody well. Rabbi Liebtag's class is starting next Sunday. No class this Sunday. So, we'll have a Mark Shapiro Monday, but, we'll send you all the emails and everybody be well. Shabbat Shalom. Thank you very much.
Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you.
Shabbat Shalom.
Good Shabbat.
Good Shabbat. Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you. I got to run. Okay. Bye bye.